We have a rather unusual announcement for you. Someone, a very famous character from West Belfast, has made a return visit. So please welcome to the stage the president of Sinn Féin, Gerry Adams.
Cormac Gaunt, Chucky our law, Chucky our money. Exactly. I want to start by saying that I'm absolutely thrilled to be here tonight. As you know, a lot of you thought I was in America, but I wouldn't miss West Belfast talks back for anybody. And in fact, the last time somebody talked back to me, they ended up, it doesn't matter, we'll say no more. But I'm sure you're all here tonight because you're absolutely pissed off with watching the Olympics. I have to say, we in Sinn Féin are absolutely browned off of the whole lot of it. I mean, I've stood 22 times every time they get gold for Her Majesty. Not. And then, of course, we had the Brits rubbing it into the Catholic people again by flying over the Red Arrows over our lovely island. They wouldn't have done that 25 years ago. And I think the colour of the smoke would have been a different colour than red, white and blue, I'll tell you. I also want to say a big thank you to all the Nationalist people over North and West Belfast who voted for Sinn Féin in the last elections. As you know, Sinn Féin got 25,000 votes in the last elections, yet in all there's only 19,000 Catholics over North and West Belfast. Well done, Alex, take your mask off. Surprised Alex is not in the Olympics, actually, doing a bit of boxing. And I also want to say, a lot of people have said that I never shook the hands of David Trimble, who used to be the leader of the Ulster Unionist Party. You know him, Beetroot Bake. Well, actually, I got a lovely watch out of it. And I want to also say, but as you know, I've written a couple of very successful books. My most successful book was Before the Dawn, which sold 100,000 copies. So with the proceeds of that book, myself and my friend and comrade Alex Dacre Maskeyoff had decided to open up a bed and breakfast up in West Belfast, and we call it the Kneecapper's Arms. And I want to tell you about the facilities that we have in the Kneecapper's Arms. We've got gas, electric, and of course the compulsory petrol. But we also have a lovely sandwich bar there, and we strongly recommend the Barry McGuigan Club sandwich. That's four rounds with nothing in it. I'm only joking, you Barry, you were one of the world's best. And by the way, just on the subject of boxing, I'm sure you're all going to be rooting for Paddy Barnes tonight. I don't know who he's fighting, but I hope he wins it anyway. Good feeling, I'm sure he'll beat him anyway. I also want to sing a little song for you here today. It's a Rolf Harris number, because everybody says I look like Rolf Harris. Tie me kangaroo down and all that kind of stuff. Or kangaroo courts, or whatever you call it, I don't know. But I'm going to sing it here for you, and it goes like this. Two little boys and two little toys, each had a Kalashnikov. Gilly they played, and Bolly Murphy prayed. Provos both, of course. Then as things did transpire, they called a ceasefire, ended the armed campaign. But at the city hall, they voted with them all, as they heard Gerry Adams saying, do you think that we've gone away, you know, when the Brits are still over here? We haven't got a mission of decommissioning, and we're going to hang on to our gear. That was just especially for Gregory Campbell. All right, Gregory.
All right, there, what about you, lad?
Gregory, of course, loves to come to discussions, but I would say they're more like arguments and discussions. I'm looking forward to getting lashed into him later on tonight. In the nicest possible way, of course, Gregory. He's right at the front door there. Anyway, I want to hand you over to my friend and a very, very special friend of mine. Please give it up for Martin McGuinness. All right there, hey, what about you? I just want to say this here, that as you know, whenever the first assembly had opened up a Stormont, that I was the minister for education on this island. And I have to say that on that first day of the assembly, I said to Sammy Wells, I said, Sammy, I didn't recognize you with your clothes on. Sammy Wilson ran after me and says to me, Martin, I'm going to sue you for libel. I said, Sammy, judging by the photographs, it'll never stand up in court. And I have to also say, I said to Breed Rogers, formerly of the SDLP, I said, Breed, I wish the hell you get a shave. You look like Alistair MacDonald. And not only that, I have to annoy Mr. Bob McCartney from North Down. You know the bastard, or the barrister. I'm not trying to say that Mr. McCartney's a snob, but he's the type of man who would step out of a shower to have a piss. And I have to also say that there's a lot of people in this lovely college tonight are saying, how come Martin McGuinness was the Minister for Education when he didn't have any qualifications? Well, actually, I had 2 A levels. A level day police station and level day hotel. This has been Marty McGuinness. Gourmet got Chuck Erla. Thank you very much, Nate. Thank you.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, of course, being in our beloved little province, we do have to draw a balance. We've already had Gerry Adams and, of course, Martin McGuinness. But we do have Martin McGuinness's once most fierce rival in Mid Ulster, and that, of course, is the Reverend William McRae is here tonight. William McRae, what have you got to say in response to both Martin McGuinness and Gerry Adams?
Well, I just want to say this here. As you all know, I represent the Protestant people in Macker of Dalton, Mid Ulster, or wherever the hell I'm standing. But I want to say this here whenever I was in the Martyrs Memorial, listen to the good Reverend Dean pumping out a sermon. I produced this deck of cards from my inside pocket. And Ian Pizzi came running down to me, his face was purple. He says, Willie, what are you doing with the deck of cards in the Martyrs Memorial? I said, well, Ian, this deck of cards is my Ulster Bible. Because when I look at the ace, I know there's only one Ian Paisley. When I look at the two, I'm reminded of every tig in Mid-Ulster that seems to have 2 bloody votes. And whenever I see the 3, I'm reminded of the number of jobs there is in Strabane. And whenever I see the 4, I think that's Specky Forrest or Gerry Adams. Thank God he's in America. And whenever I see the 5, I think of the 5 wise virgins that didn't join the Women's Coalition. And whenever I see the 6, I'm reminded of the number of feet of soil that David Trimble will soon be under, that Judas. And whenever I see the 7, I think of the DUP, the Magnificent 7. We really all are a bunch of bloody cowboys, except Gregory. Just because you're here, Greggy, just because you're here. I mean, whenever I see the 8, I'm reminded of the golden garden gate in heaven where myself and all my DUP comrades will be. Hopefully not yet. I mean, whenever I see the 9, I look at the nude photographs of Sammy Wilson in the south of France. And we are talking millimetres. I mean, whenever I see the 10, I'm reminded of every Catholic woman in Mid-Ulster that has 25 children before she's 31. And whenever I see the Jack, I'm reminded of the ex chief constable of the RUC, Jack Herman, who stabbed Ulster in the back. And whenever I see the Queen, God bless you, ma'am. I wish to hell my mother could get a hip replacement as quick as yours did. I may never see the King. I think of the big bollocks on the horse. And you can take that whatever way you want. You see, Ian Paisley, this deck of cards is my Ulster Bible. What do you say to that?
All I can say to that is, you can keep the ace and stick the rest where the sun don't shine.
Thank you very much indeed, Jimmy, and thank you. Thank you. I've been specially requested to do this particular gentleman tonight. I don't normally do him. He's passed away, but was one of my most favoured characters, certainly in the political field of this province, and that, of course, was Lord Gerry Fitt, Fit the Brit, as some would call him. He is here tonight. Jerry Fit, what's it like to be back here in Ireland?
Let me tell you something. As you quite rightly said, I represent the Catholic people of West Belfast for 25 years. I fought for 25 years to get them our houses in West Belfast. And what happens when I get them our houses in West Belfast? They burn me out of mine. So I had to move to London. London's a very quiet place. In fact, it's that quiet I can't get a sleep at night. So what I do is hire a couple of hoods to come round to my house, kick a door down, break the window. That way I get a good night's sleep. I feel as I'm in Belfast. But ladies and gentlemen, I want to share an experience with you all here tonight. There was 10 of my family and only one double bed. I wasn't complaining. My mother and father were very, very poor. In fact, they were that poor, they couldn't afford to buy blankets to throw around us each and every night. So my poor mother, God rest her soul, had to take this coat out of the wardrobe and throw this coat around the 10 of us each and every night. And we used to fight like mad to try and get a bit of this coat. One night, however, I managed to get both of my legs down into one arm of the coat. Unfortunately, there was a house fire that night. And the state of me getting down the stairs, the two legs and the one arm of this coat was unreal. I somehow managed to make it to the bottom of my stairs. My father said to me, Jerry, what are you doing? I says, what am I doing? There's a house fire. He says, I know there is, but it's across the street. He says, now get up them stairs and get into bed. And I was halfway up them stairs and I never forget it. My father says to me, he says, Jerry, I tell you what, you've been the black sheep of this family. You brought the police to the door, you brought the priest to the door, you brought the teachers to the door, you brought the neighbours to the door. Tell you what to do, Jerry, take the bed and get the hell's gates out of the house. I remember lifting that bed, ladies and gentlemen, it was a ton weight, the other nine were still in it. And I moved to that notorious house on the Antrim Road, which was petrol bombed more times than RUC Land Rover Drumcree. And the older people in here may well remember, this is gospel. I was in that house for 2 years when two gunmen broke into my house waving 9mm pistols up the stairs at me. Well, I was at the top of the stairs waving the 9mm back. He said, go ahead, punk, you don't call me dirty Jerry for nothing, make my day. He says, no, Jerry, your dad wants the bed back. After that incident, ladies and gentlemen, I decided to leave Ireland and I joined the Merchant Navy. And I was a fireman in the Merchant Navy. And sea driving that fire engine around that boat, it was a bloody nightmare, I'll tell you. But I got seasick and I decided to come back to Ireland. And I stayed on a house on the Fenian end of the Omer Road, a wee parlour house. I was in the parlour looking out, bucket and rain, gale force winds, thunder and lightning. I thought, right, I'm going to take a walk. I went down the Ormo Road, didn't get rerouted once. Got into the Ormo Park, and there in front of me, ladies and gentlemen, this is gospel. There in front of me was a kangaroo. And I'm going, a kangaroo in the middle of the Ormo Park. Gale force winds, bucket and rain, thunder and lightning, a kangaroo. And go, Skippy, Skippy. On closer inspection, it was a greyhound squatting having a shade. You can't get them mixed up after a couple of beers, I can tell you. But ladies and gentlemen, that was been the sad, sad life of Lord Jerry Fit. I hope your lives are not as sad as mine was. Good night and God bless. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, give it up for John McBlain. Just one final announcement before we get going. I've been asked to remind you about the Palestinian Day tomorrow in St. Mary's, and in particular, the speaker at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening, so get yourself along there. Now, I'd be delighted to welcome our panel to the stage. We'll need a bit of a hand. Would you like a hand? Okay, I'd like to hand over now. Okay, I'd like to introduce our chair for this evening, which is Yvette Shapiro. So that's everyone. I'd like to introduce our chair for this evening, Yvette Shapiro. We were calling her earlier a veteran journalist and broadcaster. She was disputing the word veteran. It's our way of saying highly experienced and very skilled. I'm sure you'll agree. Yvette returns to West Belfast Talks Back, and we're delighted to see her here this evening. So thank you, Yvette. Glad to see you here.
Thanks, Magella. I think she means I've been around for a long time, but we'll let that go past. As Magella says, this is my second time here. I was last here 2 years ago, and if tonight is as good and as lively as that was, it's going to be a great night. Now, as the banner says, it's the Festival of the People. This is the Forum of the People. It's your forum. You ask the questions, and you point the direction that you want to go, and our panellists here will do their best to answer the questions, and no doubt there will be controversy, there will be disagreement, there might even be some agreement, but there will be debate. And please don't be shy with your questions. I don't need to say that to this audience, because the last thing that anybody is at West Belfast Talks Back is shy. Now, we do have a time constraint, as everybody knows. Paddy Barnes is fighting at 9 o'clock, and I know many of you will want to see that, so let's keep it moving, and in fact, let's keep it moving as fast as the man himself will keep it moving in the ring. And good luck to Paddy. We start this evening with our panel. Gerry Kelly, MLA. He represents North Belfast, a former junior minister at Stormont. He was a senior negotiator of the Good Friday Agreement and a former IRA prisoner. Ruth Dudley Edwards, Irish-born historian, writer and broadcaster, and author of the 2009 book Aftermath, the Omagh Bombing and the Family's Pursuit of Justice. She is regarded as pro-unionist. She tells me she is open-minded. So it's up to you to probe further with that this evening. Gregory Campbell, beside me, is the MP and MLA for East Londonderry. He is the former Minister for Regional Development and Culture, Arts and Leisure. He appeared in the BBC Real Lives documentary At the Edge of the Union, which was temporarily blocked in August 1985. It actually led to a one-day strike by the NUJ to defend the independence of the BBC. And last year, a man was convicted and given a suspended jail term and fined after posting a menacing message on Facebook about Gregory, and I'm sure nobody will be menacing this evening, just challenging. And last but not least, George Galloway, MP for Bradford West for the Respect Party. He's also been the MP for Bethnal Green and Bow, and before that, you'll recall, he was the Labour MP for Glasgow Hillhead. He is a founder of the Viva Palestina convoys. He was expelled from Egypt. He was also expelled from Labour in 2003. And
I'm open-minded too. Me and Ruth, we're both open-minded.
Like Ruth, he has Irish roots. Your mother, I believe, yes, was an Irish woman and yes, a Republican. Your father, a Scottish trade unionist. So that is our panel for this evening. Please give them a warm welcome. Now, if you'll forgive me for taking the floor just for a moment to kick us off with questions this evening. As we're talking, there's a fairly fierce firefight going on in Aleppo, which is a city in Syria. It's going on within a district there between the government forces and the rebel forces. And the question that I would like to put to the panel first this evening is, if the Western governments feel that it's the right thing to do to support the rebels in Syria, why do they not think that it's the right thing to do to support the Palestinian freedom fighters? George, you want to pick it up?
Well, because they're hypocrites and they're crocodile tears. They're crocodile tears for Syria were never shed, of course, when Israel occupied a substantial part of Syria and has continued illegally to occupy it since 1967, with the full support of the same Western countries who now like to tell us how concerned they are about Syria. It's just hypocrisy. It's a proxy war. The Syrian people are paying with their blood for a proxy war against Iran. It's a softening up exercise. They believe that if they can destroy the alliance between Iran, Syria, and the national resistance in Lebanon, led by Hezbollah, that this will make the task of regime changing the Islamic Republic of Iran easy. It's really not rocket science. If you know anything about the area, if you know anything about divide and rule as a tactic, and how could you not, living in Belfast, then you will know that this newfound love affair of Israel, America, Britain, and France for Sunni Muslims is the precise reverse of the newfound love affair they discovered for Shiite Muslims in preparation for an attack, invasion, and occupation of Iran. So don't believe a word of it. The arguments that are being adduced are precisely the canards, the falsehoods that were adduced in the run-up to the invasion of Iraq, which I'm sure virtually everyone in here opposed, because I know that, because you can't find anybody anymore, even in Parliament, who say that they supported the invasion and occupation of Iraq. The people of Syria are paying the price. The serpents of sectarianism, of hatred between people of different sects and different confessions that are being conjured forth, will poison the whole region for decades to come. The Christian people, I make this point before Gregory weighs in support of the Islamic fundamentalist rebels. It's very odd, the alliances that emerge, isn't it? The Christian people in Syria are currently living in a state of absolute terror at the prospect of Al-Qaeda being victorious in Syria. The American people appear completely oblivious to the fact that the people who flew aeroplanes into the Twin Towers and killed thousands of Americans on 9/11 are now receiving weapons, money, and diplomatic and propaganda support from the very same United States of America. As Mrs. Thatcher once said, it's a funny old world.
Gregory, you were name-checked there. Would you like to come in?
Yeah, as I noticed when we were all being introduced, I suppose one of the sort of almost unique factors I have is that I'm the only one on the panel, it would appear, that doesn't have Irish roots. That's good. Just hope everybody understands that. I hope they will. But, I mean, I watch, and I'm sure we all watch, and it's always dangerous to be presumptuous. Always dangerous, George. Don't presume. But as I watch the events unfolding in Syria, right across the Middle East, it sometimes is a judgment call to the rest of us in the West about which of the regimes is worse, before the Arab Spring or after. We don't know, because the jury's still out in each, on almost every one of the countries where there has been change. So there is an evolving position there, which is a worsening position in Syria. And there are no easy, simplistic answers. Some people might think they are, but there's not.
And do you support further intervention beyond what the West is already doing in terms of supporting the rebels?
Well, I think that on a base level, the rebels do have support in the West. And that's on a very basic level in terms of trying to get them small arms to compete with the Syrian government. But as I say, you know, we simply don't know what is going to be the outcome, even if the rebels were to win in Syria. Because in other countries, we see the persecution of non-Muslim groups right across in the Middle East, whatever regime is in charge. So, you know, there are a lot of changes underway in the Middle East. Not all of them are good. You know, it's an easy flag to wave that regime change means greater democracy. I wish it was as simplistic as that, but it's not.
Ruth, what's your stance on this?
I don't have a stance. I mean, I think Gregory's point is a good one. We have no idea what might come next. And we have to be terribly careful about taking sides. When it came to Iraq, I mean, I know there were people who thought it was all about oil, and there were people who thought there were deep conspiracies, and obviously George would have a very clear view on this. I think there were good intentions in going into Iraq. I think people with good intentions who went in and who backed it have been terrified by what happened afterwards. I think when it came to Libya, there was a tremendous tussle going on between those who said, but we've got to help those suffering people. They're being murdered by this, by Gaddafi. They've got to help them. And they were given limited help. And now we see all sorts of unhappinesses and splits and happening that the West doesn't know what to do about. And there is Syria, and anyone with a heart will look at the terrible things that are happening there. And, of course, the cry goes up, the West should do something. I would actually agree with George that America is being extraordinarily naive about this. I don't think it's as simple as he thinks it is. I mean, I think Assad is a frightful dictator, as Gaddafi was, as Saddam Hussein was. I understand that George has a certain yen for dictators. I mean, this is the man who told us that that the worst day of his life was when the Soviet Union fell. But I understand at the same time why he has a certain yen for dictators, because for a lot of people, life was more straightforward and more secure. I happen to have a yen for freedom and democracy, but I also recognize that what's going to happen in Syria, if Assad is overthrown, when Assad is overthrown, is going to be probably a frightful civil war. And George is right that the Christians are already running. It's going to be frightful for some of the minority groups. I have no idea what's going to happen, but what I do know is that it isn't simple, any more than the whole matter of Palestine and Israel is simple. And one of the things I find hard to explain in London, where I live, is how loyalists fly fly Israeli flags, and Republicans fly Palestinian flags. I mean, that it's got that personal. I would love to see Fela and Fubel showing a certain amount of open mind and getting an Israeli spokesman next year. I really do think it's time you listen to the other point of view. And I would like to find loyalist groups inviting Palestinian spokesmen to talk to them. There is far too much of this taking of sides.
Jerry Kelly, do you take a side?
I've been known to. I think, in fairness to the question, it was about the comparison between Palestine and what's happening at the moment in Syria. And, it is very obvious sides are being taken, and they're being taken for the benefit of whatever country happens to be involved in. You know, the fact is about Iraq, it's a fact, not sort of taking sides or anything else, that lies were told to invade Iraq. I mean, that's proven now. It's not even a guesswork. It's not somebody's opinion. Lies were told, and they were told, and they were very big lies. Were told to the world, and then they invaded the country. And one of the things that Sinn Féin did, actually, when George Bush was over here along with Tony Blair, was to give him a letter and to argue with him that the wrong thing to do was invade any country. And it is based, in fairness to what Ruth is saying, on the basis that we don't know what's going to come out the other end. So it's not about me taking sides, but let's be clear about this. The question involved the Palestinians. And the Americans and others have been involved in supporting oppression of a people over decades. And that oppression is so deep, it is actually incredible. And there have been people here who have been over there. In terms of getting both sides of the story, I mean, one of the things that I do along with some others, because of the peace processors, I travel sometimes to other places where there's conflict on. I mean, it's not true that we don't invite Israelis over here.